We hope you enjoy this recording of a live broadcast brought to you by Torah in Motion. For more learning opportunities, please visit www.torahinmotion.org.
Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want to share with you this morning a very, very different way of looking at the story of Esther, particularly the character of Esther. And for this, all of us need to have the Megillah open in front of us. Okay? And what I'd like to focus on this morning is the pivotal chapter of chapter 4 in the Megillah. After the decree has been made, and now it becomes knowledge to Mordechai and slowly to Esther. And what I'd like to do is to read here through from Pasuk Aleph through Pasuk Yud Aleph, and to raise what to my mind are some very troubling questions about how Esther conducts herself, what the standard approaches are to this, and why I find them insufficient, and why we need to have a new way of looking at what's happened to Esther, and then what leads to her turnaround at the end of the parak. Okay? So, we're going to read here from Pasuk Aleph to Yud Aleph and ask some questions along the way. Mordechai yadat kol asher na'asa. He heard about everything that had been decreed, Haman. Vayikra Mordechai begadav. Vayilbash sach va'efer. Vayetze betoch ha'ir. Vayizach zeka gdola umara. Vayavo ad lifnei shar ha'melech ki ein lavo el shar ha'melech b'levush sak. He knows the halachas very well. You come until the gate, you don't go into the gate. Uvechol medina u'medina mekom asher dvar ha'melech v'dato magia, evel gadol le'yehudim, v'tzom u'vechi u'misped, sach v'efer yutza le'rabim. And now we come to Esther. V'tavona na'arot Esther v'sariseha, v'yagidula. They came, her servants came to her, and they told her. What did they tell her? Let's read on. Vatitchalchal hamalkah ma'od. She was blown away, shocked, absolutely thrown. Vatishlach begadim lehalbishet Mordechai. We still don't know exactly what she was told. Let's read on. So she sent these clothes, lehalbishet Mordechai, lehasir sako me'alav, that he should take off his sackcloth, velo kibel, and he didn't accept it. Vatikra Esther lehatach misarisei hamelech. And when she heard that he wasn't taking off the sackcloth and putting on the new clothes that she had bought at the Gap and sent him, she wanted to know. In fact, she even commanded Mordechai, what is going on? So the messenger goes out, and then Mordechai shared everything that had happened. It's only after this that Esther knows what happens, right? Because then they come back in the next pasuk with the text of the gezera et patshegen ktav adat in pasuchet asher nitam b'shushan hashmidam natan lo leharot et Esther lehagidla. Now this means I want to come back again to pasuk dalid. When we read in pasuk dalid vatavona na'arot Esther v'sariseha v'yagidula, what did they tell her? What did they tell her? Right, they don't tell her there's a gzera, there's Haman, the Jews are going to be killed. All they tell her is that Mordechai is in the Sha'ar in sackcloth. Okay? And how does she respond? She sends clothes, right? She doesn't ask what's going on. She just sends clothes. And it's only after Mordechai refuses to put on the clothes in Pasuk, the end of Pasuk Dalet, Velo Kibel, only then Vatikra Esther lahatach misarisei hamelech asher midefaneha vatetzaveo Mordechai ledat mazeh v'al mazeh. Only then does she send to find out what's going on. I mean, I'd like for us to consider this in the terms of the context of what's going on here this morning. You know, imagine that you're sitting at your table and you get a text message, okay, from your sister. I'm standing outside the classroom, bawling my head off. Terrible things have happened. What would you do? Would you send her back a text message saying, I'm in the middle of a great shiur, shh, I'll be out in 45 minutes? You wouldn't do that, no. Nor would you come forward and say, "Oh, Rabbi Berman, my sister's outside crying. I'm sorry, I have to." You wouldn't do that either. You would probably bowl over the table and run out of the room. Now, Esther can't run out of the room. Esther can't run out of the room. But one would expect that if she has... What does she know at this point? All she knows is one thing. Mordechai is at the Shar HaMelech B'levush Sak. That can't be good. Something terrible has happened. What would we expect? What should she do? Find out, yes, immediately. Send those messengers, because she can't go out herself, to immediately find out what's going on. But that's not what happens. That's the secondary thing. The first thing that she does is to send clothes. Send clothes? It's like, my sister's outside crying. Here's a tissue. What are these clothes? Why is it? And then when she does, when Mordechai refuses to put on the clothes, and then she finally does seek to inquire, notice the tone. Notice the tone. Pasuk, hey. Vatikra Esther. Lehatach misariseh ha-melech asher amid lefaneha. Vatitzavehu al Mordechai. Literally, she commanded him. Commanded? Why? Why commanding? What does that imply if she has to command him? I command you. Ladat mazeva al mazeh. It sounds like she's demanding explanations for this behavior. What do you mean you're out there, bilavush sak? What is it? What is this business that I send you clothes and you don't put them on? There's a total disconnect here. We've now seen it in two ways. That when she understands that Mordechai is in the greatest of duress, she doesn't want to seek right away to understand what it's about. She sends out clothes for some reason. We'll get to that in a minute or two. And then when Mordechai doesn't accept the clothes, and she does seek to find out, it's not, "Oi, what's happened? Moti?" No, it's much more, "What is this? Give me an explanation." But tetzaveihu al Mordechai, ladat mazeh ve'al mazeh. What's going on here? It's a scolding. There's no compassion. Very strange. Mordechai sends her the text, because he realizes, well, something's going on. How come Esther didn't immediately ask what was going on? How come Esther is demanding explanations from me? What is going on here? I better show her the actual text itself. She should really see for herself. So let's see what happens when she actually sees for herself. Okay, going back to Pasuk Chet, Vet Patshegen Ktav Hadat, Asher Nitan B'Shushan LaHashmidam, Natan Lo, Mordechai gave to the Shaliach, Leharot Et Esther U'Leagidla. So now Esther has in hand, she's going to hear it from Hatach, and she's going to read it for herself. Wow, all of Am Yisrael is about to be destroyed. Everybody who I know and love is about to disappear from the face of the earth. There's about to be genocide. Now before we read Pasuk Yud Aleph, what might we expect Esther to do? Either how she should respond, what she should do, what she should say, what possibilities might exist out there. Right? Considering that she can't go out to Mordechai, right? That's not allowed. But what could she say? What should she feel? Yes?
Can she ask Mordechai to come? That's why he needs to wear the clothes.
Well, maybe. Okay, maybe Mordechai, put on clothes, we'll sneak you in. Maybe. What else? Something of distress, right? Even if she doesn't have a plan, what to do, sneak Mordechai in, some, and how might that distress express itself? Oy vavoy. Yeah, in fact, we saw in Pasuk, that's good, I like that. We saw in Pasuk Dalid, I just learned recently that oy in French is goose. Isn't that true? Some of you speak French. No? No, it's not. Goose. If you look in Pasuk Dalid, she knows how to get distressed, right? In Pasuk Dalin, when they told her that Mordechai was sitting out there in sackcloth, Vatit chalchal hamalkama od. So one would expect that when she hears that Am Yisrael is about to be destroyed, it would be Vatit chalchal hamalkama od me'od, me'od me'od. Right? Some type of distress. Maybe a tefillah. Something. Okay? Good. Let's see how she responds. Pasuk Yud. Vatomer Esther lahatach. She sends back a message. Vatitzavehu el Mordechai. Again, command. A scolding. Kolav de Hamelech. ועם מדינות המלך יודעים אשר כל איש ואישה אשר יבוא אל המלך אל החצר הפנימית אשר לא ייקרא אחת דתו להמית. This is not going to work. There are these rules. לבד מאשר יושיט לו המלך את שביט הזהב וחיה. ואני לא נקראתי לבוא אל המלך זה 30 יום. That's all she says. What's absent here? Right, there's no distress. It doesn't say that she was distressed. It doesn't say that she tore her garment. It doesn't say that she davened. Good. What else is absent here? Well, I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. Vayizak ze'aka gdola u'marah, the end of Pasuk Aleph. I think that's a collective tefillah. Okay, well, maybe. Okay, that's a question about, you know, Shem Hashem in the Megillah, but it sounds like a public mourning. Okay, so she doesn't seem to be upset. She seems to be scolding Mordechai. What else is absent here? Mordechai came up with a plan. And she? Yeah, don't like that plan. No alternative plan. Nothing. So what we see here is not just that Esther is powerless. Esther seems to be in a different place altogether. What's going on here? On drugs. That's interesting. I don't know where one sees that. I hadn't thought about that. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the obvious is that she went into the palace, hid her identity, and has hidden it so deeply that she's not identified.
Okay, yeah. It sometimes gets lost on us. She's been in the palace how long now? Anyone know? 6 years. 6 years, when you add up the dates. 5 years as queen, and then the year before when she was being pickled in all those different spices and things, okay? 6 years. What we have here is Esther, who is really, inside herself, no longer Jewish. That is, she's not only had to hide her identity, but I'd like us to think about the little bit of the backdrop of how Esther got to where she was. She knows that her tafkid in life is to be anti-Vashti. Vashti was someone who asserted herself. Esther is someone who must do everything possible to make the king happy. This is what it says. Liot kol ish sorer beveto. This is the purpose of being a woman in the Persian Empire. A woman's tafkid is to model herself after her man's dreams. That's what it means to be a woman in this empire. And she has been playing the part very, very well. She has had no contact with anyone Jewish directly for 6 years. Think about that. What would we look like if we were to go 6 years without a word of Hebrew, a word of Yiddish, never a Kiddush, never gefilte fish, never a Shabbos, a Yontif, nothing. One second. And so what we see here, I think, is that Esther totally sees herself devoted now to Ahasuerus. And now we can ask, when she hears that Mordechai is about to enter the Shar HaMelech, Belevush Sak, her first response is to send clothes. Why? Some say it's out of concern for Mordechai. And I wonder whether it's out of concern for Ahasuerus. Meaning, this is an Avera what you're about to do. And then, therefore, that's why she demands, Vatitzavel Mordechai, Ladat Mazeva Amazeh. What's going on here? What is this insolence? What is this going against the king's word? And this is what she emphasizes in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Everyone knows what the halacha is. You can't just go in like that. You're asking me, it's not just that you're asking me to do something that's suicidal. You're asking me to do something that's against the law. And so Esther here, often the interpretation of Esther here is that, well, she's spoiled. You know, she's had a good life now in the palace. And she has a lot of shoes, like Imelda Marcos. And so she's not thinking so much about her Yiddishkeit. No, she's a victim because she's a woman who is powerless. She is a woman who knows that the name of the game is to model herself around the man's dreams, because that's what the Megillah says, is what a woman's tafkid is, and especially with regard to the king. And so she's really, really very far Jewishly. And this is what Mordechai has to contend with. Above and beyond all that, there's the issue that she had been told to hide her identity, and now in the interim, what's happened to that identity? Being Jewish is now a big liability. Right, because of Haman's decree, which she now knows all about. So what Mordechai is really asking her to do is to climb Mount Everest, because he's asking her to do many things simultaneously which she is not equipped to do. She is asking her to violate the king's law, which she couldn't do, and nobody could do that, especially not a woman. And if you try to do that, you get vashtid, right? See Perek Aleph. But beyond that, he's also asking her to reveal her stigmatized identity, because being Jewish now is stigmatized. It means admitting to the king, "Oh, your highness, there's just one thing I forgot to tell you. I'm Jewish." And she takes out the chai or the Magen David. How do you do that? How do you do that? Forget about the laws of can you go in, can you not go in. "Your highness, I've lied to you for 6 years." Or there's just something kind of big that I didn't tell you. That's hard to do. And then to sort of sign yourself up for the death march, that's not easy to do either. Again, forgetting beyond the halacha that she says, the halacha, as it were, that you can't go into the king's court. To sort of sign up for death. "I'm Jewish." Not easy. None of this is easy. And the question is, what is it that happens that makes the trigger for Esther? Okay? And I want to tell you an approach that I've had. I had great deliberations with myself whether I could share this here with you this morning. I teach Tanakh at Bar-Ilan University, and I have taught this material to over 1,000 students in the course of about 8 or 9 years. And it is hands down the most popular material that I teach. And I've always wondered whether I could teach it in this setting. So this is an experiment here this morning. Okay, I think everything I'm going to say is kosher, perhaps a little bit sensitive. Let me explain. I looked for myself within the behavioral sciences for a model of someone who has a stigmatized identity and then has to come out with that identity and reveal it to others. So think, for example, maybe our grandparents when they immigrated to this country. You know, of course, they came over as Jews, and it wasn't always so cool to be Jewish in a lot of circles. And in large measure, our grandparents sometimes got by sometimes hiding that they were Jewish, if they could, changing their name, certainly not showing off their Jewishness. They sort of passed in the general culture. And to come out in a big way, you know, "I'm Jewish, and I'm proud of it, and I have a kippah on my head, and I make demands because I'm Jewish," which is what Esther's going to have to do here, would have been a very hard thing to do. But I couldn't find much written about that. And so I began to search for other models of people who have a hidden identity, because Esther's identity is hidden. No one has a havamina that she's Jewish. Of someone who has an identity that has a stigma, and then wants to reveal it, because she has to reveal her identity, that she's Jewish. And what I found to be an extremely helpful lens or model for understanding this is clinical theory of coming out. Let me explain what I mean by that. I don't mean to say, chalila v'chas, that Esther is like that anyway. That's not the point here. But the material about what happens when people who are in that position have to come out is extremely illuminating. Just to give you an example, leave aside that. Think about Bali Tshuva. Bali Tshuva go through the very, very similar process. Let me explain. Let's look at some of the things that Esther does, and then I'll come back to how we see it in Bali Tshuva and how it stems from all this material. Mordechai says to her, let's go back to Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayegidu leMordechai et divrei Esther. Vayomer Mordechai lehashiv al Esther, al tedami benafshech lihimalet beit hamelech mikol ha-Yehudim. Ki im hacharesh tacharishi ba'et hazot revach v'hatzala yamod la-Yehudim mimakom acher, ve'at ubet avich tovedu. Umi yodea im le'et kazot higat l'malchut. Come back to that. The most important thing here is Pasuk Tet Vav and Tet Zayin. V'tomer Esther lehashiv el Mordechai. Lech kenos et kol ha-Yehudim hanimtzeim v'shushan, v'tsumu alai v'al tochlu v'al tishtu shloshet yamim, laila v'yom, gam ani v'na'arotai atzum ken, v'chen avo el ha-melech asher lo chadat, v'chasher avadati, avadati. Okay? Look carefully at the things that she tells Mordechai to do here in Pasuk Tet Zayin. There's several things. Gathering all of the Yehudim, fasting for her, fasting not just a Yom Kippur fast, but a triple Yom Kippur, right? Shloshet Yamim, Laila Vayom, Gam Ani V'Na'arotai Atzum Ken. And I'm going to fast that way. And my Ne'arot, my little entourage nearby, are going to as well. Now, of all those measures, which of those strikes you as the strangest? The Na'arotai, right? Notice, who's going to fast here? Okay, Jews should fast. They're under the gun. I'll fast. I'm Jewish too. Na'arotai. Now, let's consider, those Ne'arot, who are they? They're not Jewish. They're clearly not Jewish. How could they possibly be Jewish? If when she had been taken queen, right, if she'd said, oh, I get to choose my ne'arot, well, I'll take Rivki and Soroleh, right, and Bela. I mean, that, yeah, she could have done that, but that would have given away that she's Jewish, right? So she wouldn't have chosen Jewish ne'arot. And clearly the court wouldn't have just by accident sent her, you know, a bunch of girls from Beis Yaakov. So it's clear that these ne'arot are not Jewish. And then the question is, so what does it mean, v'ani v'na'arotai atzum kein? It's unbelievable. Poor girls. And she must have told them. I mean, she couldn't just say, okay, girls, 3 days, three nights, no food. Right? I mean, what would be the point of that? So she has taken these non-Jewish girls and presumably has explained to them what it's about, and now they are going to fast with her. I have never seen a parshan that relates to this issue at all. But from clinical theory of coming out, we can understand this. Think about someone who begins the path of becoming a Baal Tshuva, because it's a form of coming out. What happens is this. It's universal. Tshuva never happens overnight. No one suddenly one day wakes up and takes on everything all at once. It's always a path. The path often starts with some feelings that there's some emptiness in my life, there's things that I want to explore, maybe there's some fond memories I have of a grandfather or a Seder I went to once upon a time. People begin to explore things. And then what happens is that they realize that where they're holding, where they live, the people they interact with aren't doing it for them in the way they want. And they're beginning to have these musings about wanting to move a little bit further. The type of what solidifies identity here always is to begin to share this with people. Well, who would a Baal Tshuva on the first ways of sharing this new identity that they're taking on, who will they share it with? Okay, the first revelations of this new identity, you have to make sure that it's going to be safe, right? You want somebody who I'm going to share this with them, what's happening to me, where I'm going, but I want to make sure I'm not rejected, right? If I tell my friends, you know, oh, well, I don't do the touching thing anymore, boys and girls. What? You a freak? You know? Or I, you know, it's a great restaurant, but I'm not going there anymore. Why? The food's great. What's the matter? You can see how telling everybody that I'm becoming from is very threatening. After all, especially if these are people that I love, right? And so, as a person begins to become from, we all need affirmation in these steps that we're taking that I'm okay. So who's the first person that I turn to? So as was pointed out here, very often the first person will be another from person. Because obviously, if I'm beginning to toy with the idea of making Kiddush every Friday night, if I tell someone who already makes Kiddush every Friday night, they're not going to laugh at me. They're going to applaud me. And just the very act of having shared this with them will make me feel stronger. Here, I shared it. I said it. I came out loud. I like doing this. I feel this is meaningful for me. I feel closer to the Ribono Shel Olam. When you tell another person, that makes you feel stronger about your own identity. But that first person that you tell has to be someone who is going to be secure. And so therefore, it's usually another person who shares the same interest, okay, but is not necessarily someone who is close to me. Okay? As in my relatives, my family. And the idea here is always, when a person becomes from, that or is on the way to becoming from, that you want to tell more and more people. Ideally, a from person wants to be recognized as such. All of us here, even those of us that work outside the Jewish community, it's much more comfortable for us if ultimately everyone knows the score. I'm a from Jew, I do the Shabbos thing, I don't eat, I don't drink what you guys drink, and I want to be accepted as such. That's the ultimate goal. If we can't reach that goal fully, then it impedes upon us a little bit. It's a little bit of dissonance, a little bit of discomfort. I want to be recognized as a whole person. When someone is on the way to doing tshuva, starting from a position of absolutely no commitment whatsoever. So the first person they'll tell is someone who's from, but ultimately, who do they really want to be able to tell to feel good about themselves? Who's the most important person to be able to tell such a thing? God? God always hears. What? Yeah, your mother. I like that. From someone who apparently is a mother, and maybe even a grandmother. Your mother, yeah. In other words, ultimately, when someone is changing lifestyle in a big way, and everyone around them had expectations, oh, you're like this, you know, you do all the things with the family, you know, we go to Red Lobster to eat lobster, and we do this on Saturdays, and all that, and a host of other things that a frum Jew wouldn't do, then there's the fear that I'll be rejected by those that are closest to me. At the same time, the affirmation which I most crave is from those that are closest to me. I suspect for all Balei Tshuva, not most, all Balei Tshuva would prefer that ultimately their parents and their other relatives would say, that's great, geigah into hate, have hatzlacha rabba, we love you as you are, we respect the decisions that you've made. And when that doesn't happen, that's a source of great pain. Now, why do I bring up all this? It happens to be true, but I think it's very illuminating. It's all about coming out. Coming out happens in stages. There's coming out with regard to religious identity, as in a Baal Tshuva. It's the same thing here. Ultimately, who is most important for Esther that she come out to? Mordechai knows what she is. Ahasuerus, right? To say to Ahasuerus, I am Jewish. But of course, just like with parents of a Baal Tshuva, that's the hardest one. Right? That's the scariest one. And so that's not going to be the first. And just like a Baal Tshuva, often, when they're in the very first stages, they can't even really admit it to myself. Yeah, it's true. I like Kiddush, but ani lo dos, as they say in Hebrew, which is kind of like, I'm not a religious fanatic or a freak. You know, I just like the Kiddush thing, because there's all sorts of stigmas that the Chiloni environment creates. And there's a little more, well, I like the whole Shabbos atmosphere thing, but it doesn't make me a religious person. I'm a little dos. I'm not one of those religious freaks who's flipped out, right? And it's the same sort of thing here. To be able to move from all the stigmas that the previous world gave to the identity of being from, Esther now has with regard to Persian stigmas about being Jewish. How do you begin? Well, now, who can explain to me? Why does it say ani v'na'arotai atzum ken? What function do the na'arot serve here? What's it doing for her? Exactly. She apparently knows the first people who will learn that Esther is Jewish, Mordechai always knew, but the first people apparently who will learn that she is Jewish are these na'arot. It's a very important first step, because she can tell them and they'll say, hey, Your Highness, we're yours. We're behind you. Whatever you are, we love you. And so the Na'arot play a very critical first stage for Esther in terms of reaffirming and getting in touch again with the Jewish identity that had been totally obliterated in the 6 years in the palace. There are other things that happen here as well. We have here the duration of the Tzom. What does it say? Tzumu olai v'al tochlu v'al tishtu. Shloshet yamim laila v'yom. That's rough. Yom Kippur's hard enough, right? 3-day Yom Kippur. Now, if I were to ask, why a 3-day Yom Kippur? So I guess the answer normally would be, well, look, you know, the matzav here, the situation is really pretty horrible. So since it's really pretty horrible, so a regular Yom Kippur won't do, we need to triple it. There's something to that. But there's another element, I think, to this 3-day fast that can be explained through this same lens of coming out. Again, without referring to its original context, but in the context of a Baal Tshuva. A Baal Tshuva will decide in the early stages, I like doing the Shabbos thing. They go to friends who make Kiddush on Friday night. Maybe they even go to shul for a little bit to see what it's like inside. And then, Monday morning, they get up, get dressed, go to work. When they go to work, her colleagues, what do they think? They don't think anything, because nothing's changed. Because all of this activity is happening in the off time, on the weekends, at home. Work, meanwhile, is the same. Everyone maybe knows that she's Jewish, but they don't think that she's becoming religious. They don't really care much about it. This is very important. It's a very important stage, where there are limited areas where the change is happening, and other areas where the behavioral literature calls passing. You're passing as if things are normal. Everything's the same. So I go to work. No one's going to notice that I didn't order the ham sandwich today. I ordered a salad. I'm on a diet. No one really knows why. No one's even noticing, really, that I've ordered salad instead of the ham sandwich. for everyone else around me in the meantime, while I'm sort of solidifying my religious commitment at home, I'm passing. It's as if nothing is any different at all. Okay? And this goes on for a very long time. Who does the Baal Tshuva share? With whom does he share these new commitments? It's very limited. It extends a little bit at a time. Who can I let in on what's going on? How confident am I about my new position? How confident am I that I'm going to be received and approved by those around me? And for everyone else, business is normal. The way I was yesterday looks to be the way I was today. This passing is very important, so that the buildup of the new identity is gradual, to the point that I can then share it with everybody and say, listen, from now on, I'm not, you know, going to wear the pants that I used to wear. Or now I'm going to put on a yarmulke in public. But there has to be a big buildup inside of strengthening of identity before that happens. Can you see how that informs what's going on here? Shloshet yamim laila v'yom. So yeah, the situation was really dire. But what's going on here also is the strategy of passing. Passing. Because what's going on? She doesn't eat. Okay, so who really knows that? Well, her ne'arot, because they're the ones who are in charge of her daily schedule, maybe bringing her food. Everyone else just sees the queen. Queen around the palace. Queen's around. She looks the same. She obviously can't tear kriya, right? That's too public. So she's undergoing something where, to all who see her externally, she's the same. She's Queen Esther. Meanwhile, she's buying herself time to assimilate this new identity. And of course, what's she doing this whole time? There is something that she's doing. What is she doing during these 3 days? Okay, she's fasting. Maybe she prays to herself right under her breath. She can't be seen with, you know, with a sitter shuckling, right? That would be too overt. The fasting means that while everyone still views her as normal Queen Esther, kefisha haya, as always was, internally, her Jewish identity is growing and becoming strengthened, as we all know, right? The end of Yom Kippur is much harder than the beginning of Yom Kippur in terms of the fast. And then the second, it's constantly growing. I mean, it's something that doesn't leave you, right? When you're hungry, you're aware of it 24/7, okay? And not only is she engaging in a kind of act that very strongly feels Jewish, fasting. Jews are good at fasting. We have a lot of fasts, I've discovered. There's something else. Notice, without looking inside, right? We have two parties who are fasting, or three, right? We have Esther and the Ne'arot, and then we have the rest of Shushan. Who's leading the fasting? Who's leading the fasting?
Esther.
Mordechai. Let's now look at the pasuk and see carefully what it says. She says, Lech knos et kol ha-Yehudim ha-nimtze'im b'Shushan. V'tzumu alai, v'al tochlu, v'al tishtu, shloshet yamim, laila v'yom. Gam ani v'na'arotai atzum ken. What does that mean? Gam ani v'na'arotai atzum ken. With you, yeah. We will do as you are doing. We will do as you are doing. So who, in the way she set it up, who's leading the fasting? The Jews are, right? You know, we often think of it the other way. She's saying, folks, after me, we're all going to do tshuva, we're all going to fast together. I'm fasting, you fast with me. But when you look in the pasuk, it's pum fakert. It's exactly the other way around. You guys should all go fast. And when you're fasting, we're going to join you. Now, it could be that temporally speaking, in terms of time, everyone started the fast at, you know, 4:53, you know, just like on Yom Kippur, something like that. But the way she sets it up, you're going to fast, and we're going to fast as you're fasting. It's very significant to me. Because what it signals to me is that she's saying, there are those that are going to fast, who always fast, who fast in public. Jews, you're the real Jews. I'm playing catch up. I'm trying to get in touch with that. So I'm going to fast as you fast. Because I'm not yet really back to being a full Jew. Okay? So this fasting for the 3 days is engaging in what is called passing. That there's negotiating and assimilating this new identity internally in a way that's hidden, and externally, she goes about her daily affairs as the Queen of Persia. Now, we can see here that she's very tense about all this, because how does she end what she says? She says at the end of Tetzayin, Uvechen avo el hamelech asher lo chadat v'cha asher avadati avadati. She hardly seems confident that the Ribbono Shel Olam will be with her. In fact, she's full of trepidation. In other words, she's still stuck in the old mode of, I can't be like Vashti, challenge the king, ask something of the king. No one does that. We all follow his drumbeat. We all model ourselves after his wishes. Oh, so I'll go to the king, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, I'll get killed. You can see that she's not so much coming out of the closet with this, she's being forced out of the closet, but engaging in all the strategies that someone who tries to change their identity goes through. Now, there's one very, very interesting thing that comes out in the literature about coming out that I'd like to bring to here. I'll start with a story a student of mine at Bar Ilan once told me, and then we'll see how it really lights up something here in the Pasuk. I've had students come to me. When I teach at Bar Ilan, I speak much more about the original context of this whole lens of coming out. I've never had a student who's come to me to say, I am that, or I know anyone who is that. That's fascinating to me. It tells you a lot about how stigmatized that is. I've had a student come to me and say, you know, I love that material. I went through something very similar. This was a woman who was in her late 30s. Not that deep, doesn't really matter. And she said to me, I can't have a child. We've been trying for years and years. We've tried everything. Gornisht helfen. And now we're going for adoption. And it means coming out to people that this is our reality, that I just can't, it's just not going to happen for me. And there's stigmas about this, and who I tell, and I tell slowly, etc. All of this work. Now listen to the following other story. A woman comes to me, she says, this material about coming out, about identity, really spoke to me. She says, I have a brother. He's deaf. He was born deaf. We gave him everything. We raised him, you know, with all the best training possible and technologies, and we got him, you know, he can speak and he can read lips and he functions wonderfully. And we told him growing up, you are like everybody else. There's no difference. And we want you to feel just like everybody else. At around 18, this brother decided that he wanted to go to like clubs for the deaf. And everyone was surprised. Wait, I mean, you're just like everybody else, and you function, you know, you can communicate with us, and we love you, and you do everything like everybody else. And what he said was, you know what? Everyone's been telling me that I'm like everyone else my whole life, and I've been denying who I really am. I am deaf. And it's not just a physiological thing that some nerves in my ear can't do what everyone else's does. It informs my entire identity, and I have been lying to who I am. And I want to get along socially with other people who understand where I am. So yeah, you know, I can function fine at school and at work with everybody, but my deepest kishkas are deaf. My identity is deaf, and I want to be with other people who understand that. Now, what happened here? What happened here is that this person had an identity that has some stigma to it. You know, disability is a kind of a tricky thing. And out of great love, all of those around him had always been saying, no, you don't have that identity. You're not that. You're normal. And we want you to view yourself as normal. And it was only after a very long process that the person got in touch. I am not like everybody else. Maybe I am not normal, but that's who I am. And I want to be true to myself, and I want to be with people who understand what I'm all about. That person had to re-examine their whole history of interacting with others, saying, yeah, see, I can do it, but always apparently feeling a little bit empty inside. There's a little bit of a bluff. There's a little bit of a disconnect. Everyone's telling me that I should be just like them, but I'm not. Until one day the person wakes up and realizes who they really are and tired of pretending. Now, watch what Mordechai does. Mordechai says to Esther, in Pasuk Yudalid, Ki macharesh tacharishi ba'et hazot, revach va'tzava yemod ha'yodim imakom acher, ba'atu beit avich tovedu. And he finishes by saying to her, because there's no point in scolding her at this point, he's yelled at her, you can't yell, you know, she's a big girl, right? He can only win with her by somehow persuading her in terms of some type of argument, but not by scolding her. And his final argument is, Umi yodea im le'et kazot he got Lamalchut. Now I imagine if you had asked Esther, right? If you had asked Esther, Esther, how did you get to where you are? Before this whole story of Perek Dalet. She's there 6 years in the palace. Esther, how'd you get here? What's your understanding of the trajectory of your life? I suspect Esther would have said, I mean, how did I get here? I got kidnapped in the middle of the night. I was taken to the harem. No one asked me. I had no choice. Then I was taken and dunked in 6 months in this perfume and 6 months in that perfume. And then I was paraded before the king. And then he chose me. And that's how I'm here. What do you mean, how did I get here? That's how I got here. That's her life narrative. That's the story she tells herself. What Mordechai is telling her is, Esther, I want you to re-examine your life and say, is there a different narrative that might be at play here? Is it all just a coincidence? Or maybe there's a string of things that are going on here that you need to look at suddenly in a new way. And that apparently is what works with her, that there were many girls, there were thousands of girls who were chosen. Why was it Dafka her? But it's something that's painful for her to do, because until now she's just assumed, I am like every other girl, and I'm playing my part, and my part is to be loyal to the king. Mordechai, in asking her to reconsider her history, this is anybody who comes out in any sort of sense, often has such a self, the first circle of coming out, the first revelation is not to another person who's from. The first revelation is to myself. Things are changing in me. I'm getting in touch with who I really am. But that's a little bit scary, because until now everyone has told me that I should be like everybody else. And this happens especially for people who have identity problems in the classical sense of coming out. It turns out that a lot of people only get in touch with that very late in life. For most people who are normal, you're aware of what you are from earlier. If there's one thing a person is like solid on, it's, you know, where I go on that score. It turns out for a lot of people whose identity in terms of how it's normally construed coming out, that only happens very late, 18, 20. And you can understand why. Because what happens is that, you know, in high school, everyone's told, this is what's accepted. This is what's normal. All the billboards, all the movies say this is what's normal. And so even if people have some inklings here and there, I'm like everyone else. Okay, with this I'm a little bit different, or with that one I'm a little different. It takes a very long time until a person is honest with themselves about who they are. And that's what Mordechai is trying to tell Esther. The narrative that you've painted for yourself, maybe there's a different way to think about it, a way that you'll be able to understand a little bit about more of what you are. And apparently that's what turns it around for her. So that what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that it's a very different take on what Esther is all about. Normally people understand, Esther, she was spoiled. She liked the good life in the palace and didn't immediately respond the way she should. I think that's not fair to Esther. I think Esther was a real victim. Esther was a victim of the sexism in that whole environment. She knew that she had to be the anti-Vashti. She knew that she had to sublimate every aspect of her identity and just serve the king. And I think that when Mordechai asks her to be Jewish in a really big way and climb Mount Everest, this is an enormously tall order for her. People think that in Perek Dalet she's kind of like Superman. You know, she goes into the phone booth, turns around and comes out, you know, Superwoman or something like that. And I don't think it's that way at all. I think that Esther actually has a very tortured process. The process of coming out in the classical sense, or even for a Baal Tshuva, can take a very, very long time. And I think for Esther it does as well. And that's why she ends off in Pasuk Tet Zayin, not by, I'm there, Ribono Shel Olam, I have emunah in you, but, huh, Kasher Avadati Avadati. And I think, just with this I'll finish off, I think that, you know, we don't see, or we see at the beginning of Perikei, right, she goes to Achashverosh, and look, lo and behold, Achashverosh accepts her with open arms, right? Even though she's breaking the law, right? Remember that, yeah? And he calls her in, and he says, Ma bakashatech ad chatzia malchut v'inaten lach. And you would think, wow, this couldn't have been better. This is exactly what Esther wanted. What would we expect Esther to do when Achashverosh says all that? Go for it, girl. This is it. This is your opportunity. She doesn't do it. It takes till Perek Zayin. It takes till Perek Zayin because she's not confident enough to do it. There's several more steps, which we won't have time here for this morning. I've written an article about this someplace, tracing everything that happens. Most people understand what happens in the rest of the Megillah as a kind of James Bond type of movie. Okay, we have our hero, or heroine, Esther. And the question is, how do we trap the villain, Haman, in just the right way? And so all these various parties and stallings are to create just the right situation to nab him. But I think that there's a different way of understanding this, and that is that she really should have asked right there in Parakeh, the first party, or Parakeh in the second party. And she blows it. She's not ready to do it yet. She's not fully there. She's still passing. She's still testing the waters. She's still trying to figure out for herself, can I really do this? And so it's only really in Perek Zion that she asks for it. And I'll just end with one thing. This is amazing. Perek Zion is where she actually makes her request. She's now going to do it. She's now going to say to Achashverosh, I'm Jewish. I've lied to you for 6 or now 7 years. And I want you to save the Jewish people. Watch what she does and what she doesn't do. Perek Zion. Pasuk Gimel. Vatan Esther Hamalka Vatomar. Imatzati chen beinecha hamelech, v'imal hamelech tov, tinaten li nafshi bishelati ve'ami bevakashati. That's brilliant. Do you realize what she hasn't had to say? Or what she's left out? She just says, I want my request that you've been nudging me about, I want you to save my life and the life of my people. She never tells him that she's Jewish, because that would have been too much. In other words, even here, even at her great moment of heroism, she can't really fully come out that she's Jewish. By the end of the Megillah, she will, but it's a very slow and steady process. Okay? All right. This is al regel achat, the way in which I approach this. I think it's a really helpful lens. Any questions? Yes? Oh, I'm defending her. I'm trying to explain how difficult this all was. I think she's even stronger for not being Superwoman from the get-go in Perek Daled. I think she's a much greater heroine for having to really slosh through all this stuff and grow slowly.
Well, let's keep in mind, let's look at the realities of the political and social realities that she's functioning in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no indication really she's unaware or ashamed of her Jewishness. But just, I mean, the queen has been put to death. She's been put in charge there. She's surrounded by non-Jewish people. I can understand and empathize with her functioning.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
What is it? Can you just articulate exactly what it is about Esther and the issue of identity that you're...
That
she knows who she is, but it takes her time to come into that?
She's had six... Her whole career as queen is dedicated to not being Vashti. And the Megillah is extremely lengthy in Perek Aleph, the end of Perek Aleph, about what a woman's role is. A woman's role is to shut up. A woman's role is to please her husband and all the men around her and be totally loyal, think nothing for themselves, strive for nothing, just be there to satisfy their dreams. I'm not exaggerating. That is what Perek Aleph says.
Maybe that's okay. The beginning of feminism.
Yes, I think so. In fact, there's a medrash. It's one of those midrashim that if Chazal hadn't said it, I wouldn't have license to say such a thing here before you. There's a medrash that says that the night that Achashverosh and Esther were together, it says the following. It's a drush on the pasuk. The pasuk is less important. What the medrash says, the medrash tries to understand, why did she win? Why was she chosen? The medrash says the following, that when Achashverosh wanted the experience of being together with a woman who had lots of experience in that type of situation, she knew how to satisfy that. And when Achashverosh wanted the experience of being with a woman who had no experience in that realm whatsoever, she knew how to give him that as well. What a wild idea. What are Chazal trying to tell us? What Chazal are trying to tell us is that Esther figured out the name of the game to satisfy him. To be so in touch with what he wants that she can give him anything without him asking, just sensing it. That's why she won. That's an amazing medrash, but I think it fits in terms of shot here with what I'm saying here. Yes?
Jewish connection. maybe she's, and if she's thinking of her own narrative, she's been telling her narrative is really this tragedy where she's kidnapped and, you know, and essentially raped and horrible things, right? Then maybe she assumes, oh, maybe he's like this for me. Maybe he's mourning, in some sense, my story. And so she sends him clothes.
No, but this is 5 years later.
But
suddenly he shows up in sackcloth because she was taken 6 years earlier.
I'm saying if she perceives her story as tragedy and she has no connection to community, she really is sort of, you know, this on an island by herself, right? So she thinks of things, she's you know, self-centered, and I don't mean that in a, you know, in a way that's critical of her, you know, judging, but that's
no, you mean it like Simone de Beauvoir says it, that a woman in this position can only think about herself. That's what she's been told to think about, her little house and the things that she has control over. I totally understand what you're saying.
So,
yeah.
So I think you could see that she hears that Mordecai is, you know, is mourning in some sense, and she connects it to her story.
Why? After 5 years?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what sort of interaction they've had over 5 years, and I don't mean other than
maybe.
Other than her finding out the story about becoming Darish, we don't really hear much going on between them. So she sends him clothing to sort of be this, you know, the big person saying, you don't have to mourn for me, don't worry.
Maybe. It's 5 years too late, it seems to me.
Maybe. I think he puts it that way.
Okay.
He sends it back.
Okay.
And she says, why are you sending it back? What do you mean? What's going on? And that's the first inkling that it's actually...
Okay, but then you have Pasuk Yud Aleph, where she's similarly obtuse and doesn't... Yeah.
But I think, so he sends back to her, so she says, you know, what's going on? Why won't you take it? What do you mean? You know, she can't relate to the idea that he's mourning for something else, something bigger, something that's not about her. He tells her what it is, and in the same sentence says, and now it's your job to go and risk your life. And she says, are you kidding me? You told me that, you know, you were the one who told me to hide who I am.
Uh-huh.
And you're not even mourning.
Okay.
Here you are, you know, you're being upset. It's not even for me. You're upset for somebody else, and now you're telling me, oh, go risk your life. So she gets very angry, responds and says, are you crazy?
Very interesting.
It's a suicide mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back to her and says to her, rewrite your narrative. It's not just about you. It's not just the tragedy.
Okay. I hear. That's very interesting. Interesting. Okay. It could be. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Just to support your point, I mean, the fact that she sends him the clothes kind of suggests that she wants him to talk to Achverosh, because he can't come until he puts on decent clothes to talk to the king. So there is a suggestion she thinks it's his responsibility, Mordecai's responsibility. But the real point that I wanted to make is she says, avadati, avadati. Now, avadati, the shorish for avadati, can mean a lot of things. Mostly we think of it as lost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can mean perish. It can
mm-hmm.
also mean suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost myself. I don't know who
okay.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of saying, hey, I have a role. I'm the queen. This is the role that you've assigned to me. This is the role that I've played to the perfection. I mean, she's kind of retired now, but she still was a queen for 5 years. Nobody else was a queen for 5 years. This is her accomplishment. And now all of a sudden, they're asking her to go back to say, hey, forget
mm-hmm.
the fact that you're not a Jew anymore, really. A person in those days, the wife was almost like the property of the king. Her Jewishness is like very subsidiary
yes.
to her identity. And
yes.
all of a sudden they're saying,
exactly.
it's more important than being the queen. It's more important
mm-hmm.
than living. And she says, avadati, avadati. So this isn't the future, right? This is saying, who am I? You know, what am I going to do? I mean, am I going to commit suicide? Am I going to lose everything? It's not just saying I'm going to be gone. It's more than that. And I think
mm-hmm.
those two words are very important.
Yeah, I think it fits in with what I was saying. Okay, is that it? If I could just ask the technician to cut the mic because I want to say something. Okay, very good.
We hope you found this recording a most enjoyable learning experience. We welcome your feedback. Please contact us at info@torahinmotion.org or at www.torahinmotion.org. Have a great day. Thank you.